assist in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
Your body's filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not. Your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run. But your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
Listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
Taken me as an inspiration in my radio career.
You must be some kind of a kook.
Thank you.
It's hard out here for a pimp.
All right, listen up, y'all.
A bunch of a-holes.
Where are you gonna go? Where are you gonna run? Where are you gonna hide?
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention?
Chapter systems are offline.
Mario!
Hashtag confused, dude.
What kind of feeling? I'm high on believing that you're in love with me.
I'm not good enough for that.
.504 Central, 404 Mountain, 304 West Coast, 604 East Coast. Good evening, Iceland. Happy Tuesday, Australia. Welcome to the award-winning, but yet to be nominated, This, That, and the Other, heard every Monday and Thursday here on Revolution Radio, located at revolutionradio.com, common spelling in your favorite internet browser. Hang on a second. I had to do a mic check on Revolution Radio, located at revolution.radio, common spelling in your favorite internet browser. As always, we're 100% listener supported. Head over to the website, revolution.com. click on the donations tab where you will find a number of ways to support this internet radio station. I was under the impression that I would be unavailable this evening, but as they say, things change. So here we are, kids. Here we are, hot off the presses, as they say in the radio business, from the folks over at Phantoms and Monsters, Pulse of Paranormal, link in the chat room. Did Detroit witnesses encounter leprechauns or Lenane Rogue? First of all, that's a fancy word for me. I probably mispronounce it, but let's continue. I mean, leprechauns, how do you mispronounce that word? Two friends were hanging at Pierian Park in Detroit, Michigan, when they heard childlike laughter. Then two small people dressed as leprechauns suddenly appear. I received the following account. Quote, I would like to tell you about an experience I had that I and my friend, my friend and I, went through in Detroit, Michigan on Saturday, April 3rd, 2013. Now you know what's going to happen, folks. You know what's going to happen. I'm going to sit here and complain once again about somebody who sends in a decade plus old story, but what they perceive to see a decade ago. But hey, you know what? As Art Bell said, let's give it a whirl. It was a typical Saturday night. My friend and I were hanging out around the neighborhood, you know, not really doing much at all, just a little smoke, smoke, pass, pass, puff, puff, drinking a 40. I added that. We decided to walk over to Pierian Park, smoke some weed. I shit you not, folks. This is a complete cold read. I had no idea they were going to go and smoke some weed. Do you now perhaps have an idea of why what they think they saw perhaps were leprechauns and not just two small kids dressed up for who knows what running around a park? Smoke some weed and just hang out. This was at about 9:30 p.m. We walked over and found a bench that was a bit out of the way. It would provide us some privacy to let us smoke in peace, because you all want to smoke in peace. At about 11 p.m., so mind you, they've been there for 90 minutes, just puff, puff, passing, kids. That's a long time to smoke some weed. A long time. We decided to leave the park when we heard some rustling in the trees behind us, followed by what sounded like laughter. Tiny, high-pitched, almost childlike laughter. We thought at first there was someone messing with us and stood up and yelled it, "Cut it out, jackasses. We're not falling for it." This was met with more laughter and more rustling from the trees. Uh-oh. Sounds ominous, eh? Suddenly, two small people jumped out of the tree and almost floated down to the ground in front of us. Sounds like these two were doing a little more than puff, puff, passing. We jumped back when we saw these two small people, almost yelling from the sudden surprise and their sudden appearance had given us. And these two small people, both male, could not have been more than 4 feet tall, stocky, and looked like they were wearing green three-piece suits. They looked almost like they were wearing leprechaun costumes and carrying what looked like sticks, walking sticks, I'm sorry. My friend told me that they looked almost like Hornswoggle from the WWE. World Wrestling Entertainment, formerly WWF. Hornswoggle was a character. He was a short-statured man who dressed up as a leprechaun, which I had to agree that he really did. He looked at us for about 5 seconds with no sound and no movement. We were totally and completely freaked out and decided to get out of there as quickly as possible. And the story goes on and on, link in the chat room. So again, we know that this sounds incredible. And you might try to dismiss it as fantasy made up by two crazy men, but we know what we saw was real and what happened to us was definitely real. Doubt it. You were smoking dope. It took you a decade to get this story to us, and now it means absolutely nothing. B as in B, S as in S. Why am I even wasting my time reading this story? I don't know. It's just the things that I do for people. March 18th, 2024. Are they looking for me? Possible alien pilot avoids capture by U.S. Army troops. Do they interview the alien? What? A reader, T-Bear, recalls the description of a very unusual incident witnessed by his mother and several of her family members. Okay, so it's an REO Speedwagon. I heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another that you were messing around. I was unable to recover additional information regarding the episode. If anyone has knowledge of this alleged UFO crash, please forward me from the author of Phantom and Monsters. My mother and her family were working in Naples, Florida in the late 1950s. Oh my gosh. The story is 7 decades old. One day worker saw something crash nearby, a plane. All the workers ran to the site to search for survivors. The aircraft was sticking out of the sea near the beach. When the rescuer got there, they realized it wasn't a plane, but some type of spacecraft. This is worthy of pasting in the room in the event that somebody here knows what happened in the 50s in Naples, Florida. The ship had no doors or windows that could be seen. Beside the ship was one of the pilots. The pilot was still in its bizarre spacesuit. It was tall and very skinny, but had a very large helmet. The helmet didn't have a shield, but a robotic-looking faceplate. Two of the workers picked it up and said it had little weight. It appeared to be dead. Others found the second suit. The suit was empty. It was lying in the nearby grass. Still, others tried to get into the ship to look for any more survivors. My question, why? And who are these people? Did they go to the news stations? Then suddenly, an army helicopter appeared. The army came in great numbers to secure the location. Troops surrounded the workers' camp and forced them to stay. They were there for 2 days afterward. The military told the workers that no one would believe them if they told what transpired. Who would believe hobos, drunks, and uneducated Mexicans? I don't know. But it can't hurt to report it, eh? Why would you define yourself as hobos and drunks? The foreman told the workers to do what the military said, and no one would get hurt. Okay. While trapped there, my mother observed the whole situation. So this is the story coming from your mother to you. Interesting. One of the 2 days trapped there. So it sounds like this group of people were held against their will for 2 days because apparently a UFO crashed. One body was recovered. An empty suit, presumably one of the aliens just ran away into Naples, Florida somewhere. Probably now residing in human camouflage in Boca Raton, Florida, which is a retirement community. She met an unusual person. This is while his mother was there for 2 days. While sitting waiting for the occupation to be over, oh my gosh, a person wearing a large blanket approached her from behind. In a bizarre mechanical voice, the strange individual asked her, "Are they looking for me?" Again, why is this all in quotes? I don't know if you quote a tertiary source, but your mother's the prime source, right? So why is it your mom giving this story? She turned to see a mechanical face under the blanket. There appeared to be lips moving, but there was a delay of sound coming from them. First of all, I don't believe this story, and here's the reason why. Here's the reason why. If I am retelling a story told to me by my mother, I'm going to say things like, my mother told me that there was a mechanical face. My mother told me that this person approached her wearing a blanket. My mother told me this. My mother told me that. Not this. She turned to see a mechanical face under the blanket. There appeared to be lips moving, but there was a delay of sound coming from them. It sounds like is somebody who's writing a story trying to make it appear as if he's relaying the story as told to him by his mother or speaking for his mother, yet slips into novel writing. She realized it was not human and told it yes. She told it to keep away from the military and look for a chance to escape. Okay, so what seems to be going on is this. Let me take a sip of my water because this is, I might go along with this. What we have so far is this. A group of, as the writer describes, hobos, drunks, and uneducated Mexicans witnessed in Naples, Florida in the 50s, a UFO crash. They ran over to it. They found one dead body. They lifted it up. I don't know where they brought it. Then they found an empty spacesuit. Alien ran away. Apparently they went inside, saw no more bodies. Then the military shows up and says, hey, you people, you quote, hobos, drunks, uneducated Mexicans, we're going to lock you up for 2 days. Now, the reason I'm quoting that is literally in the story, he writes, or she writes, who would believe hobos, drunks, and uneducated Mexicans? That's why I'm saying that. I'm quoting from the author. The military shows up, detains these folks for 2 days. Specifically, it's the army that shows up. And he refers to it as an occupation. These folks were detained for 2 days. Apparently, why this dude's mother is, I don't know, lollygagging around a detention facility, some individual with just a blanket over their body walks up and says, are they looking for me? And instead of saying, boy, it's pretty hot here in August in Naples, Florida, why do you have a blanket on? Nobody else noticed this random person walking around with a blanket over their body wondering, it's probably, I don't know, 90 degrees, August 3rd, and you're wearing a blanket. That seems odd. What also seems odd is this individual sought out one person and gave themselves away by saying, are they looking for me? And she apparently said yes. So what I suggest you do is keep away from the military, maybe grab some other disguises as opposed to a blanket that makes you stick out like a sore thumb, and look for your chance to abscond, escape from the occupation. Apparently there's a happy ending to this story. When the army was still there cleaning up, the hobos found the surviving crew member. They put a hooded coat on it and other clothes to totally cover it up. They poured booze over it to make it smell like a drunk and help it since it had trouble walking. When the bus came to pick up the batch of workers, the workers carried it onto the bus. It suddenly spoke with a mechanical voice. Are they still looking for me? They told it to shut up and get on the bus. My family left the next day. Those who took the alien were never seen again. Signed, T-Bear. This is by far the biggest load of crap I have read in some time. And I've read some very interesting stories. I like the screening process. I love the screening process for these stories. So they basically said to the alien, get on the bus and shut your mouth. And never to be seen from again. The question is this. Did any family member help the alien on the bus? Because apparently those who took the alien were never seen again. Again, these are the things that just make me very excited to be alive on the planet that we call Earth. Scary situation in George Washington National Forest. The writer writes, I wanted to write about what happened to me and my partner in September of 2023. Well, at least we get something within the last 7 months, right? We were hanging out with our two new friends, husband and wife. Let's say their names are John and Mary. First of all, if you can't give real first names, it's not even worth believing your story. It's a cold read. I'm already thinking there's either some crazy swinging thing going on or drugs and booze. But let's find out. They, meaning John and Mary, decide to camp at Todd Lake Recreation Center, which is in George Washington National Forest, and invited us to spend time at their campsite. Have a few beers, relax by the campfire, etc. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. My partner and I decided we weren't up for an overnight camping, but we were down to hang out for a bit. First of all, why not just say, is it your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband? What is it? What is this? Me and my partner. Business partner? Croquet partner? Running partner? Cribbage partner? Drinking partner? Landscape partner? Hearing dead bodies partner? Serial killer partner? What kind of partner is it? The recreation center was only 45 minutes from home, so we thought we would drive up. So we thought we could drive if we didn't have but a few drinks, ate food, and chilled for a couple of hours. So we get there around 4:30, right? And have camp snacks, sandwiches, chips, you know, nothing special. The usual shit. And some alcoholic seltzers. There you go. Really throwing them back, aren't you? We wander down to the lake and let their dog swim. And then we decide to head back to the campsite and start a fire. I knew we weren't staying the night, so I kept track of how many drinks I had and the food I ate to ensure I was suitable to drive later. I like how this person is giving the groundwork to let everybody know, listen, we're not a bunch of drunk people who had this situation. We were throwing back a few seltzers, but we were also eating, you know, camp food, sandwiches, chips, you know, nothing special. Sucking up all that alcohol, drinking copious amounts of water, too. It was basically a seltzer to two glasses of water. It was 1-to-2 ratio. I've completely just ad-libbed that whole thing. In total, I had 5 seltzers the entire night. Not to sound like an alcoholic or anything, but 5 seltzers do not explain what happened to us that night. I just said it. Every story that I read is a cold read. I can almost pinpoint where stories are going. That's how fabricated most of these are. Let's continue. I can handle my alcohol and am reasonable, responsible while driving by pacing myself, eating food, and drinking water in between each beverage. Boy, it sounds as if I wrote this, but I didn't. So we are hanging by the fire with John and Mary, you know, the couple. And next thing you know, John says, hey, do you guys want to walk down by the lake? And we respond, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Maybe there's skinny dipping involved. The campsite has a short walking path to the lake, probably half mile away. Should only take minutes to get there. Now, this is when things get weird. Mind you, it's not weird enough that this person has detailed for us the number of seltzers he had, the food consumed, water drinking, and by the way, he can hold his liquor. Pretty good at pacing. Now, okay, sorry, this is where the story gets weird. I look at my cell phone, and I see it's 8:30 p.m., and decide to put my phone in the car before we walk down to the lake because I don't want to lose it. The next thing I knew, I woke up in the woods. Passed out on the ground on the trail with my partner in the middle of George Washington National Forest, an hour away from the campsite, and John and Mary were nowhere to be found. You know what? I think John and Mary spiked your shit. Or you're making this whole story up. My partner was on his back with his head turned to the side. This sounds risque. And I was lying halfway on the moss. The other half on him with my head turned to the side. Well, this is a provocative situation, isn't it? Almost as if we were placed perfectly. We were lost and both felt extremely confused and sick. We both started throwing up and had to take breaks walking out to try to find John and Mary's campsite. It took us an hour to get back, and it appeared we had hiked an hour outside the recreation center. We both had zero recollection of how we got there, why we were both passed out in the middle of the woods at night, and why the hell 5 seltzers with food over multiple hours span made either of us so sick and lose memory of the same time. First of all, there are 2 things that have occurred. One, you're making this whole story up. B, you're roofied. Sorry, another option. C, you folks got drunk, wandered around, blacked out. John and Mary said, let's lay these 2 down in a nice, comfortable position. Just let them sleep. I don't believe any of this story. This has all the markings of somebody who follows the missing 411 bandwagon. This is a posting from the Reddit channel Backwoods Creepy. You know what? You just feel free to read the rest of it because it sounds like BS and BS as in us. So, and then there's some comments about roofies, blah, blah, blah. Again, some people just like to post stories to see what the reaction is. And I tend to think, excuse me, oh my gosh, that's what happened there. From PBS News Weekend, U.S. support for LGBTQ plus rights is declining after decades of support. And here's why. I bet you it's political.
For the last few decades, the story of LGBTQ plus rights in America has been one of increasing public support. But now a new survey finds that for the first time in years, there's a slight decline in that support. William Brangham takes a closer look.
Throughout 2023, the Public Religion Research Institute, or PRRI, interviewed over 22,000 adults for what it calls its American Values Atlas. Last week, the organization released its findings on views about LGBTQ rights in the U.S. The survey showed, for the first time, support fell for key policies regarding LGBTQ rights. Backing for same-sex marriage dropped 2 percentage points. Support for non-discrimination protections dropped 4 points. And opposition to people refusing services based on religious grounds dropped 5 points. To help us understand this data, we are joined by CEO of PRRI, Melissa Deckman. You've been doing this survey for years, and this being the first time you've seen a downward tick in those numbers, how do you explain that?
Yeah, we were somewhat surprised to see, after several years of increasing support among Americans for LGBTQ rights, that we saw a decline. But I think if you look under the hood, so to speak, and look at the data more closely, it's really largely driven by party polarization. And so we saw much deeper declines, for example, among Republicans in terms of their support for these issues, whereas Democrats tended to stay relatively stable. And I think what's happening is that you see many Republican leaders in red states really trying to amp up the volume, so to speak, on LGBTQ rights and really trying to claw back some of those rights across the country. And I think that's had a spillover effect nationally in terms of the attitudes of Republicans, especially on issues with respect to LGBTQ rights.
In your survey, you're talking to people who both affiliate with a particular religion.
Yeah, I want to find this survey because I want to know specifically what rights the LGBTQ community are. Where's the survey? Normally they give a link to the survey in here. And they don't. See, that's what's interesting is you want the survey so, you know, you can dig in the minutia. Rights for what? I don't know. That's the problem with these stories is they don't give you any details. It's just sort of talking points.
And also non-religious people as well, correct?
That's right. So our surveys are done among Americans nationally. One great thing about the AVA is we also have enough data to look at opinions in all 50 states. But essentially, we get a snapshot of all Americans, including people of faith and people who are unaffiliated. I think it's also important to bear in mind that despite these declines that we've seen, the vast majority of people of faith continue to support the rights of LGBT Americans, especially with respect to same-sex marriage and non-discrimination laws.
So for someone who might look at this and think, oh, a 2% decline or a 5% decline is not that substantial, why does this really stand out to you?
I think it stands out because with respect to LGBT rights more generally, there has been a growing increase in support among Americans. And part of that is a reflection of the fact that more Americans, especially younger Americans, are identifying as LGBTQ. So younger Americans, more Americans have friends who are LGBTQ.
All right, links in the chat room for the full story. You can listen to it. So look, here's my position regarding rights of people. I could give two shits what you do. Just don't be an asshole. That's I could not be any more clear. That's how it works. Just don't be an asshole. There you go. See how easy that is? Don't go into stores and steal food and run out. And then when you get beat down, don't try to sue as if you were assaulted, that you were the victim, right? If you're some YouTuber, air fingers quote, not media influencer, cultural influence, whatever they call these people, and you think it's fun to go around and sort of, you know, just arbitrarily bump into people and go, oh my gosh, why'd you bump into me? And you get a left hook to the face. Don't then claim you were unlawfully assaulted. Do a search of the internet and search, you know, social influencers, you know, when social influencing goes bad or something like that, you know, just don't be a dick and then everybody will get along. But once you're a dick, then, you know, trouble happens. As predicted by many of us in the UFO community, not me, but according to a different perspective, link in the chat room. The MSM, or mainstream media, did not read the entire AARO report, though they would comment on its 64-page length, as happened in the past, such as with the Condon Committee scientific study. They just read the executive summary. They didn't bother wading through the evidence, some of it quite technical. The MSM just decided they didn't need to understand what had transpired. They were only interested in the end, never considering that the end might not be supported by internal documentation. As the writer says, and this writer is commentary on UFOs, paranormal events, and related topics, we all predicted what would happen with this new report. I happened on one of the news channels when the host of the program mentioned the latest on UFO UAP front. The host threw the question to the reporter mentioning the Pentagon and their assessment of UAP. The reporter, I believe, did mention the lengthy report and then said, to date, AARO has not discovered any empirical evidence that any sighting of a UAP represented off-world technology or the existence of a classified program that had not been properly reported to Congress. Investigative efforts determined that most sightings were the result of misidentifications of ordinary objects and phenomena. Although many UFO reports remain unsolved, AARO assesses that if additional quality data were available, most of these cases also would be identified and resolved as ordinary objects or phenomena. End quote. This is, of course, the last statement in the AARO report. There was, of course, no commentary on the accuracy embodied in the report. No comment about the trivial, such as the claim that Kenneth Arnold's sighting was on June 23rd, 1947, when it was actually on June 24th. And the analysis that Mogul explanation for the debris recovered near Roswell had nothing to do with the balloon launches, just an acceptance of the AARO report. But the real problem here is that we see the lack of reporting. I doubt the reporter even read the report, but instead flipped to the rear and read the conclusion. He never considered that this latest AARO report might be the same sort of misdirection that we have been fed for more than 70 years. How hard would it be to get comment from the other side? There are dozens of us out here who could have suggested that the conclusion had little to do with the history of the UFO phenomenon. A phone call or an email might have provided some context. Instead, we hear just a single-quoted paragraph from the report with no questions about the accuracy of it. Why would the writer of this blog, Crandall, expect anything different? If you want to know what's going on in the real world, you need to do your own deep dive into the internets. Do not watch any of your favorite acronym shows. I don't care how middle of the road you think these shows are. Don't do that. Dateline, March 13th, 2024, from the Cowboy State Daily. Montana man, 80, pleads guilty to creating giant mutant hybrid bighorns. There you go. Like something akin to Jurassic Park, an 80-year-old Montana man was nailed on federal charges stemming from creating huge hybrid bighorn sheep by using genetic material harvested from Aztec wild sheep. Arthur Jack Scubarth of Vaughn, Montana, on Tuesday, which would have been the 12th, pleaded guilty to two felony wildlife charges, conspiracy to violate the Lacey Act, in substantively violating the Lacey Act, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. The Lacey Act prohibits interstate trade in wildlife that has been taken, possessed, transported, or sold in violation of federal or state law. Each count that Skur Barth faces carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, a $250,000 fine, and 3 years of supervised release. He's scheduled to be sentenced this July 11th in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. First of all, the dude's 80 years old. My guess is he ain't doing any time in jail. Shubarth and at least five others used genetic material from parts from the world's largest wild sheep species, Central Asia's Marco Polo Argali sheep. They use cloning and artificial insemination to create hybrids. These dudes don't need to go to jail. They need to win some Nobel Peace Prize for science. That's what these sons of bitches need. Embrace their ingenuity. The hybrids were created in hopes that they'd fetch a handsome profit being sold to fenced-in hunting preserves in places such as Texas, according to the Department of Justice. There you go. This, you know, I don't know. Apparently, you got some people who are upset about it, but listen, if whatever, dude, give these folks a cigar. For decades, storytellers have been imagining what it would be like when humanity first makes contact with an alien intelligence. Link in the chat room to the story. In 1998, Arthur Ted Chiang delivered the novella, Story of Your Life, about a linguist who becomes swept up in an attempt to communicate with extraterrestrial visitors. That story was later adapted into the film Arrival. When 12 alien spacecraft arrive at points around the globe, as depicted in the movie, a collection of scientists, language experts, and military personnel work together to find a way to talk with them. In the real world, we have a similar collection of ET enthusiasts working across disciplines to start our first conversations with the alien species. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, is perhaps humanity's most well-known effort to find life elsewhere in the cosmos. The SETI Institute, as you know, was founded in 1984 and began operations in February of the following year with just two people, Thomas Pearson and Jill Tarter. Since its inception, the SETI Institute has grown considerably. Today, it employs more than 100 researchers, focused on the research on the search for alien intelligence. SETI scientists make use of every telescope and astronomical instrument in our astronomical toolkit, including orbiting scopes like Hubble and the James Webb Space Telescope, but the radio telescopes are the most iconic. How could we talk to aliens if we find them? Well, you just send them a text message. I'm kidding. In 1974, following some upgrades to the Arecibo Observatory, astronomers, including Frank Drake, sent an intentional message to any aliens who might be listening. They used the transmitter of the new defunct Arecibo telescope to beam a 3-minute message to MISR 13. Also known as the Hercules Cluster, M13 is a globular star cluster composed of hundreds of thousands of stars. The message was sent in binary by fluctuating the transmission, and when decoded, it becomes a visual message. If aliens ever pick up the message and decipher it, they'll retrieve it to some pixel art depicting the structure of DNA, a figure of the human body, numerical digits, chemical information, the solar system, and the telescope used to send the message. I hate to burst your bubble, but if you believe the folks who have been abducted for decades for the purposes of interspecies breeding, we have hybrid alien kids running around, I don't think that the structure of DNA and a figure of the human body sent up in the 1974 message is really going to help. Apparently, Travis Walton answered all the questions for the aliens. Again, I don't necessarily believe the Travis Walton story, but I'm just trying to help it out. Three moments that might convince you Edgar Allan Poe was a time traveler. Fully, I saw Arrival three times, and I couldn't last through it. I couldn't do it. I'm pretty positive that Edgar Allan Poe has the power to travel through time. Hear me out on this one, says the author. Link in the chat room. It's not just the well-known circumstances of his life, orphaned at a young age, father of the mystery novel, master of cryptology, maestro of the macabre, nor am I referring to the head-scratching details of the days leading up to his death, how he was found on the street near a voting poll wearing someone else's clothes, and during his subsequent hospitalization, he was alleged to babble incoherently about an unidentified person named Reynolds. And I won't get into the confounding reports of a nameless figure who, for 7 decades, would show up to Poe's gravesite in the early hours of his birthday with a glass of cognac and 3 roses. Tragic and curious, yes, but hardly evidence that the acclaimed horror writer could transcend the limits of space and time. No, my time travel theory concerns the author's creative output, which you'll soon see is so prophetic as to make outlandish claims seem plausible, nay, probable. The proof is in the pudding, and the pudding is a loosely linked map of flesh-eating floaters, crunched skull survivors, and primordial particles. All right. Exhibit A, the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, published in 1838. Poe's only completed novel details a mutiny on a whaling ship lost at sea. Out of supplies, the men revert to cannibalism, drawing straws to elect a sacrifice. A boy named Richard Parker draws the shortest straw and is subsequently eaten. Now, here's where it gets weirder. In 1884, 46 years after the novel's publication, 4 men would be set adrift following the sinking of their yacht. Shipwrecked, without food, they too would go the survival cannibalism route, electing to kill and eat a 17-year-old cabin boy, the boy's name Richard Parker. Interesting, yes. Evidence of time travel? I don't know. My guess is a lot of you boys were named Richard Parker back in the 1800s. The extraordinary parallel went unnoticed for nearly a century until a widely circulated letter from a descendant of the real Parker outlined the similarities between the novel scene and the actual event. The letter was selected for publication in the Sunday Times after journalist Arthur Koestler put out a call for tales of striking coincidences. Striking. Indeed. If you care to, you can just, I guess, read about it here. Safe link, kids. Exhibit B, The Businessman. In 1848, a railroad worker named Phineas Gage suffered a traumatic brain injury after taking an iron spike through the skull. Somehow he survived, though his personality would change drastically. These behavioral changes were closely studied, allowing the medical community to develop the first understanding of the role played by the frontal lobe on social cognition. Except for Poe, who'd inexplicably understood the profound personality changes caused by frontal lobe syndrome nearly a decade earlier. In 1840, he penned a characteristically gruesome story called The Businessman about an unnamed narrator who suffers a traumatic brain injury as a young boy, leading to a life of obsessive regularity and violent sociopathic outbursts. Poe's grasp of the frontal lobe syndrome is so precise that neurologist Eric Altshuler wrote, quote, "There's a dozen symptoms and he knows every single one." There's everything in that story. We've hardly learned anything more. Altshuler, who, too, reiterate, is a medically licensed neurologist and not at all a crackpot, went on to say, "It's so exact that it's just weird. It's like he had a time machine." Boy, we're really stretching the truth here. I mean, stretching it, aren't we, kids? Really, really stretching it. Exhibit C, Eureka. Still unconvinced? Yes, I am. What if I told you that Poe predicted the origins of the universe 80 years before modern science would begin to formulate the Big Bang Theory? Well, shit. Surely an amateur stargazer with no formal training in cosmology could not accurately describe the machinery of the universe. Rejecting widely held inaccuracies while solving a theoretical paradox that had bewildered astronomers, since Kepler. Except, that's exactly what happened. The prophetic vision came in the form of Eureka, a 150-page prose poem critically panned for its complexity and regarded by many as the work of a madman. Written in the final years of Poe's life, Eureka describes an expanding universe that began in one instantaneous flash derived from a single primordial particle. Whew! 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 What if Poe wasn't of a day at all, but of all days? What if his written prophecies on the cannibalistic demise of Richard Parker, the symptoms of the frontal lobe and the Big Bang Theory were merely reportage from his journey through the extra temporal continuum? I don't know. I tend to think if you're going to time travel, you'd be bringing back more vital information than cannibalism, the Big Bang, and neurology. I don't know. Maybe a little hint about WW2. That might have been helpful. Just saying. Just saying. Bearded man appears, then vanishes in Michigan Cemetery. Well, this happens a lot of time. A couple is exploring an old cemetery in Sterling Heights, Michigan, when an older bearded man suddenly appears, talks to them, then quickly disappears. The couple is stunned. The following account was forwarded to me by friends Kyle and Cam at Expanded Perspectives. Hello. My name is Josh, and I live in Michigan. I have never had an experience with ghosts, aliens, or cryptids, but I love hearing about it. I recently asked around my family and friends if they have any stories, and to my surprise, my mom told me about the small event that happened to her and my dad. Now, for some reason, he has capitalized mom and dad as if they were proper nouns. That's grammatically incorrect in the way he has structured these sentences. I'm sorry. They, my mom and dad, stopped at a little cemetery on 16 Mile Road in Sterling Heights, Michigan, called the Millar Cemetery. It apparently had a cute white picket fence and a few trees, but the acres surrounding it were low-cut field. It stood alone. It was in the late 1970s, and my mom and dad stopped to look around and investigate it. She loves old cemeteries. As my dad and mom were looking around at the broken and knocked-over headstones, a man appeared. He was an older gentleman with a medium beard and a mustache and one of those flat hats on. He made a comment to them that some kids had knocked over those headstones. They continued to look down at the broken pieces and then went to ask him a question, but he had disappeared. She said this was strange because they stood between him and the road, and again, there was only an open field around the graveyard. But he was nowhere in sight. He could not have walked away from us so quickly, she said. It was so eerie to her that she still remembers it to this day. I asked my dad this, and he told me the same details. My parents haven't talked to each other for a while, so I feel that there is a less likely chance that they are making the story up. Okay, well, these things happen. Going to cemeteries. People come in and comment on the ruckus, and then they disappear. I don't know what else to tell you, except I don't know, good on you. Anything else I need to share except, you know, that? I mean, it's just, you know, it's weird. Okay, hang on a second. Okay, look, I don't think you understand how this process works. I'm not asking you to find me a house. Our goal is to find homes that are incredibly pricey or incredibly ugly.
Oh, well, I mean, I just popped across that one because somebody I know is selling it, so.
Why don't you buy it?
Well, because I have a house.
No. What you have is a current residence. You could, in fact, have a house.
Okay, what do you feel about the one I sent you yesterday? Let's talk about it.
I've seen that model home. It's incredibly pricey to build.
Oh.
I mean, it's a nice house, but it's just the way it's laid out is incredibly pricey just because it's the aesthetics of it.
Well, I like the aesthetics.
Well, why don't you go buy it then and build one? Why don't you buy some land and build one?
For crying out loud.
Let me look at this house here.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm looking at this one right now. Hang on. This one you sent me. Coming soon. What does that even mean? What do they got to fix? Do you know these people?
I know the...
Do you know of them or do you know them?
I know of them. I mean, they did.
Isn't that funny how when people say, oh, I know somebody, you have to clarify. Do you know of them or do you know them?
I mean, he installed our sprinkler system and he comes and blows my sprinkler out every year. And then he also installed.
Yeah, I had an old guy that patio. I had an old guy that came around and blew out my sprinkler system every year, too, a decade ago. So, I mean, I know. Okay, you know what? You and I are going to have to redefine the language we use. Because I feel like every time I ask you a question, I have to go into a big, long explanation as to what does Mario specifically mean by, do you know?
Yeah, we probably need to reevaluate.
I don't mean the biblical version of Nikki knew the water sprinkler guy.
Stop it.
I knew. That's really weird back in the olden days. I knew. Yeah, you knew, all right. Get yourself a case of the clap.
Stop.
Stop it, Mario.
Stop it. Stop it right now.
Did you happen to go home the other day and just pull out of your closet your overalls just to remember?
I'm going to wear them next week just for
you. You still own those?
No, I don't actually, but
were they a standard color? Were they really loud, like yellow or hot pink?
Oh, God, no. No, they were standard.
Okay. Were they pinstripe?
No. Mm. I did have a short overall that was pinstriped, though, at one point. Mm. Like the railroad look, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I just want to share with you that I drove the hoop-de-hoop car to work today.
Did you get pulled over?
No, I thought maybe... I had to drive past your apartment this morning, so it was like I revved it up real loud, and I thought maybe he'll pop his head around and be like,
"What time was it?"
Like 8:20.
No, I was napping on the couch because I woke up, went to the gym, worked out at 5, came back, fell asleep.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Now let me look at this house. I'm on what appears to be photo 6. You know, I at first I thought I was gonna. I don't know how I feel about all this. Pine on the ceiling. I mean, it's all right. I think my thought is it would have been better if they would have just done a plain, you know, white ceiling with this, I don't know, whatever this paneling. It doesn't matter. I mean, it looks nice. It just feels a bit too dark. But you know what? For some, that's a deal breaker, but not for me. Again, I don't know how many pictures of the kitchen we need. Is this all there is? Oh, here's a bedroom. How tall are these ceilings?
I don't know. They look kind of short.
This looks like a hobbit lives here. Page 11 looks like that's where you throw the kids when they misbehave. There's a bed and a dresser.
Yeah, that's not the... It's like just like a long little rectangle.
What is this, a trailer house?
I don't think so.
Where's the exterior photo?
There is none.
Oh, see, no. I ain't wasting my time driving here. See, that's the problem. When you go through photos of homes and it's just, that's not what you're looking for. Top of the hour break is coming up, folks. A small little chit-chat with my associate, whom I happen to look at houses with. Next hour, not physically, just online, then we tear them apart and pretend that, you know, we know what we're talking about. Next hour, Sasquatch Chronicles, episode 1040, The Woolly Man. I'm sorry, The Woolly Man. We'll also be talking with Edmund this evening. Edmund was a kid in 1978 and was not afraid of them until it came to his window. Holy shite. 46 years ago, kids, give or take, that's when this story occurred. We'll hear all about it moments away from Sasquatch Chronicles. Thanks for listening. We'll hear all about it moments away from Sasquatch Chronicles.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There was blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people on the fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors. Insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B. It's the Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to This, That, and the Other, heard every Monday and Thursday here on Revolution Radio, located at revolution.radio, common spelling in your favorite internet browser. Well, we do it every week. I torture myself. I don't know why I do, but I do it for you folks. I'm a giver. Sasquatch Chronicles, episode 1040, The Woolly Man. I will do my best to keep my sarcastic comments to a minimum. Here we go.
It looked like somebody was bent over and had their head in the window of the deer blind, and it either heard me or smelt me, and he pulled his head out of the tent and stood straight up, and that shocked me. They don't make people that big.
The way it moved, almost as if it was gliding across the beach. I've never seen anything move like that in my life. They were screaming at each other in gibberish. It sounded like a language, and they were chuntering away back and forth, back and forth, back and forward. I know what a bear looks like, and there is no way on this planet that what I saw were bears.
Johnny and Lola from Utah. You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you. We'll be chatting with Edmund. And Edmund comes to us from Central Kentucky. As a young child, he had a couple sightings on this farm he grew up on. And Edmund said he kind of knew what it was because the locals and even some family members would talk about the Woolly Man of Kentucky. You know, whenever they saw this creature, they would just call it the Woolly Man. And after his first encounter, he really wasn't scared. He just knew it as the Woolly Man. And all that changed the night the creature came up to his window. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out sasquatchchronicles.com. You can become a member and get additional shows. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Edmund to the show. Edmund, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's my privilege to be here with you.
The pleasure's mine having you on. And I know we're going back to 1978 to about 1982, 83, around that time frame. And you're out there in Kentucky on this farm. If you would just start from the beginning, how did all of this start? And kind of walk me into what you saw, what you experienced.
Okay. Well, you know, I was in the third grade. And, you know, when you're in the third grade, you know, Valentine's Day parties and stuff are a big deal.
Okay.
But we had got
I got to pause it, man. In the third grade, you're what? 9 years old? 8 years old? This dude is, again, I have not listened to the story. This dude is going to give you some detailed story of something that happened in 1978. 1978, 45 years ago, give or take, right? Over four decades ago, this happened. And this dude's going to talk for, well, let's call it 50 minutes about this event that occurred when he was in the third grade. I guarantee you there will be a level of specificity in detail that you are surprised to hear from somebody who was in the third grade or was in the third grade.
We lived at the back of a gravel road. It was 5 miles to the nearest blacktop, and we were on a dead end. So we didn't go to school that whole week, and I walked just probably 200 yards to my neighbor's mailbox and put their Valentine's cards in it. And as I was turning around, I noticed these footprints in the snow. And I mean, they were huge. You know, I don't know measurements from that time.
So your parents are allowing you to walk down a gravel road where your school is canceled for a week, I presume because of snow, 200 yards, the length of two football fields. All right. I mean, I'm not saying it's not uncommon. It wasn't uncommon, but I mean, you know,
because, you know, you're a kid. You're just like, wow. But the thing that got me was they were one right in front of the other with about, I would say, 6 foot between, you know, the stride. And I went back.
Wait, he said, you don't know like size or measurements back then. But then he said, well, you know, it's probably 6 feet between each stride. Two things can't be true. You can't say you don't understand measurements, but then give a measurement. I'm no more comments for me for a while. I'm sorry. I can't do this. I have to stop applying logic where there is none.
Mom, I seen some weird footprints. She goes, oh, it's probably just a deer. I'm like, I don't want to see a deer that looks like that then.
Yeah. And I would imagine in third grade, you know, you're not thinking Bigfoot. You're probably as a kid wondering what's this big man out here, probably thinking human, doing without his shoes on.
Yeah, I was definitely wondering, like, you know, I know they can't be the neighbors, and plus they were headed towards a wood line, and 200 yards inside this wood line there is a cliff system. It's called Buzzard Roost, and it goes for a couple of miles, and it is full of caves and cliffs and just all kinds of stuff like that. There are several Native American burial mounds there. And it's just, the place has an amazing history. In 1969, the University of Louisville uncovered a 7 foot tall Native American skeleton, and it's still in their university museum there somewhere.
Yeah, there's been many reports of giants being pulled out of Kentucky, giant skeletons anyway. I know there's a, you know, you find these tracks, and we're going to kind of walk into the first time you saw the creature, but did all these incidences, all these events happen on this property?
Yes. In around it, like I said, it's nothing but woods. And there are things I'm going to tell you that, you know, I just come back to my memory and through listening to some of your episodes, it made sense. Because we would find trophy-mounted, you know, trophy-style buck deer just laying there with their backs broke and a leg missing. And everybody where we lived would get mad. They're like, why are people poaching these deers and just leaving them? And this went on the whole time I lived there. In 1980, we had just put a new house in. And I was playing with my dog in the yard. And, you know, we'd always throw the ball, throw a stick or something. And he would always come back and jump on me and we'd wrestle. He was about the only friend I had at the time. And we were playing in the yard, just, you know, your typical normal spring day. And I fell backwards. And when I fell backwards, you know, you're kind of looking back right there in the wood line. I saw this massive creature. And it shocked me. It didn't scare me. I was like, wow. And it just kind of looked at me like, I'm glad somebody's having a good time, you know, and it just, it didn't look mean. It didn't have a hateful look on it. It was just kind of curious and almost happy looking. But my dog did not like it. It turned and ran the other way. Not a yelp, not a bark, not a nothing. And I didn't see him for a day or two. He went and hid. But this creature was kind of a cinnamon looking brown, and its skin was brown, and it was very, very majestic. It almost emanated pride in itself. And when it turned around and walked back into the woods, it just did. I mean, you know, it's like nothing affected it. It just turned around and walked away like, yeah, seen what I needed to see. Time to go.
How far away from you is this creature, Edmund?
At the most, 25 feet.
It's almost like your dog knew something you didn't know. If you would you describe what you saw? What stood out to you?
Well, it had the widest set of shoulders I had ever seen. And it had a conical head. But the face, it was very human-like. Even down to the nose, the bridge of the nose. It was not wide and flat. It looked very human. But you could see underneath the hair, and it definitely was hair. It was not a fur. You could see the muscle definition. And, you know, you've heard people describe things that look like Chewbacca or something like that. Well, it kind of did, but it was like Chewbacca's bigger brother. And the thing about it is, when it turned around and walked away, I didn't really hear limbs or anything crunching under its feet. And, you know, there's a lot of underbrush and stuff through where it was at. But for about the first 5 or 6 steps, I felt it because I was still laying there on the ground. I'm getting cold chills right now thinking about it because it was an amazing thing. And when you're a kid, you don't realize, man, I just saw something nobody else ever sees.
Did you get a sense that it was male or female?
It was definitely male. You know, that was all there in the forefront to be seen by everybody. And it just, he was just huge. And his arms, they were, I'm picturing it right now in my mind. He could have took his fingertips without bending over and put them right down below his knee. That's how long his arms were hanging down.
And I know that you're just a kid at this point, but I mean, did you know what it was? I mean, did you know what you were seeing? And did you tell anyone?
Oh, yeah, I've told everyone. Everybody in my family, I've told all these stories. And I was, you know, I have known about Bigfoot and Sasquatch my whole life because there was a couple of older people in our family that would tell stories about it, you know, when they were kids seeing stuff like that. And, you know, some of them had bad stories to tell. And some of them, it was like, you know, it was just something we knew was around. It didn't bother us. We didn't bother them. In Radcliffe, they call it the woolly man because they thought it was a homeless woolly man that lived in the woods right outside of Fort Knox. There's a little river town called West Point, Kentucky. And that's where these older women seen it when they were children. You know, there was no major thoroughfare through there. and it was right by the river.
Yeah, there's no doubt a lot comes out of Kentucky for sure. On this particular day, did you run back and tell your folks about what you had seen?
Yeah, I told my stepdad, but he, you know, he, leave me alone, I'm busy. You know how that goes. They didn't believe me. I was just a kid with a big imagination. But, you know, I've always been the type person. I'm going to be as honest as I can. And if you believe me, you believe me. If you don't, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, I'm always amazed by parents because I've talked to a lot of kids off the air. And, you know, if a kid said, hey, there's Monkey Man's coming up to my window at night. And I know you kind of went through that. We'll go through that event in a moment. But I'd want to know what was going on. I'd want to know who's at my kid's window and what are they seeing? What is going on? And a lot of parents just kind of brush it off, which I don't really understand nowadays anyway, because there's so much information. Back then, I can kind of get, you know, your stepdad's reaction or your mother's reaction to this. But if you would, just kind of walk me into the next event.
Okay. Well, later on in 1980, we were walking over to our neighbor's house. We had a big garden. It was in between our homes. And, you know, it was probably 150, 200 yards between the houses. And we were walking over there like 8 o'clock at night because we'd go over there and they'd play bluegrass music. And we heard what I now know, well, at least to be referenced to, was a howl like the Ohio howl. And I mean, it just, that, you know, I was like, I know what that is. And they're like, oh, no, you don't. Just go on, go on. Scared my mom to death. Scared me to death because it sounded very close. And later on that summer, my stepdad and the neighbor were coming home from somewhere. I think they had been to a horse auction. And they saw something crossing the road, and neither one of them would talk about it. I mean, they just, you know, they didn't want to talk about it. What they saw, and, you know, they were, both of them were scared. I could tell they were scared. And I was thinking to myself, I know exactly what you saw. But we lived, like I said, in the middle of nowhere, and we had an old pole light that was about 100 yards away from the house, and it lit up the area very well. One night I was sitting in my room, and I was looking out my window, and I saw these two, what I know now to be orbs. I didn't know what they were then, but it was two balls of brilliantly white light just dancing around the trees, maybe 10, 15 yards away from my window. And it was like they were playing with each other. And I know this sounds crazy because, you know, a lot of people don't, unless you see it, you're not going to believe it.
Yeah, I think that's how all humans really are. And, you know, Edmund, when people would describe these weird balls of light on their property, this is like many years ago, I'd be like, I don't know about that. You know, I've been hunting my whole life. I've never seen balls of light that people are talking about. And then I saw it, and then I filmed it, and you kind of felt like a jerk afterwards. You're like, man, I wish I would have kept my mouth shut about boo-hooing this, because there it is right there. Not only did I see it, I filmed it. I know about a year and a half later, this is about 1981, maybe 1982. Tell me what happened.
At this time, my parents had went on a motorcycle trip. They went up through Maine, through Canada. So me and my cousin were left there at the house, basically by ourselves, for about, I think it was like a week and a half. But of course, you know, you grow up on a farm, you learn to take care of yourself. You learn, you know, you're pretty self-sufficient. And, you know, there was always something in the woods, something going on. And we were always in the woods playing. But the night I saw the white Sasquatch looking through my window, if you were standing on the ground and you measured up to the top of the window.
This is such great detail for somebody who was in third grade 4 decades ago. It's wonderful.
It would be between 9.5 and 10 feet. And this thing was looking down in the window at me. And it took up the whole window. I could see the expression on his face because the pole light was, as I was looking at it, was to his left, and it was illuminating him on his left side, and I could see, and it just, he just instilled fear in me. And my little cousin was sleeping in the same room with me, and I grabbed him, and we went into the living room. Well, if you look out my living room window, it looks up on a hill, and there's a wood road there that went to our hog pens. There was another one of the same size looking down towards the house, and I've never been so scared in my life. And these were white. They had the conical head. They were very muscular, but their skin was a kind of a dark, ashy gray, leathery looking gray. And I could just, it just stood out so, in so much relief against the white. It was crazy. But they did. They scared me to death. And through this time, like, as I said, we had the big hog pen, and we started, hogs were coming up missing. And that went on through that summer. I don't think after that summer we ever had them missing again. But thank God I never saw those white ones again either. Lord have mercy.
Yeah, your description for how high up that window was, that creature is huge. And I'm kind of wondering why this one frightened you and that first one didn't. But before we go into that, would you describe what you were seeing as it was, as you were looking out the window?
Yes. You know, where the brow ridge is, he was pulled down like he was really scrutinizing what was going on, but he just, it just radiated mean. He would flip his lip up and you could see, you know, a little bit of pink in his, and you could see, you know, the gum line and the teeth. His teeth, though, were more blocky. I didn't see any canine looking teeth. But he was not happy. I don't know what it was, but when you see something like that looking in your window, you know, it's time to go. That's why I went in the other room, and I went in there quick because I was scared to death. If he had wanted to, from where he was standing, he could reach through that window and grab me right off my bed, and there would have been nothing nobody could do about it.
This white one that you're seeing, did it appear to you to be more animal-like or more human-like?
This one looked more animal. You know, it didn't have the well-defined nose. His nose was kind of flat. And his cheekbones were more flat. They weren't as, like on the first one I saw, he had really high cheekbones. This one didn't. His face was different, completely different.
I wanted to ask you, Edmund, I know you had heard about Sasquatch kind of growing up and you had seen that one with your dog, but these having kind of a different appearance, slight different appearance anyway. Did you still know what it was? Were you like, oh, this is still Sasquatch?
Yes. I knew it was something along those lines, but I had never heard of a white one. And that's what kind of threw me, but there's no other explanation for it.
Yeah, I always wonder in encounters like this, what is the point of this behavior? Because like you were saying earlier, Edmund, I mean, if it wanted to reach through and grab you out of that window and take off, no one's going to stop it. But, and again, I know that you don't know and I don't know, but what's your take on that behavior of this thing coming up to your window?
Oh, I don't know. It never happened. It's amazing how these people have these occurrences and they're all screaming and hollering and parents are going outside and roping off the footprints and calling the local sheriffs and all this stuff. It's just, well, I saw this white creature outside my window. That's interesting. Why do you think he did that? I don't know, Wes. Let's ask David Politis.
I'm kind of giving you the stink eye.
You know, we could speculate all day on it, but I just don't think this thing was happy with anybody being where they hunt. And there hadn't been much activity around the house because, like I said, my parents were gone. And at dark, we were inside. You know, we weren't hanging out outside. So I think they thought, you know, the coast is clear. I'm going to go up here and look and see what's going on in this house. You know, that's the only thing, just their curiosity. And then when he saw somebody in there, just I don't think that he was ready for it. And by he, this one was definitely a he as well.
Yeah, I always say if you see one, there's probably another one nearby, and it couldn't be more true than in this situation, Edmund. And I'm fascinated that this one other one was kind of off at a distance. And you probably said in the beginning, I may have missed it, but how far away from the home was the other one, the one up on the hill?
Yeah, it was from the window that I was looking out of. It might have been 30 yards, between 30 and 35 yards.
Yeah, that's scary, man, especially with your folks being gone and it's just kind of you and your cousin there. The appearance of these two white ones, did they kind of look the same?
Yes, the one that was in the window, now this is just my perspective from looking, it looked to be taller than the one that was standing up on the hillside. Not by much, but it was a bigger individual.
Yeah, in situations like these, you know, where people have these on their property, eventually the creature will make its way up to the home. The very first one that you saw, you described it being hairy like Chewbacca, and these had a very different appearance to you. What were the differences between the first one that you saw, and what were kind of the similarities, beyond size, of course?
Well, the appearance, you know, like I said, the facial, there's no, how do I put it, resemblance in the face. And the white ones did not look majestic. They looked aggressive. They had their shoulders kind of hunched forward. You know, they were in a posture of, if anything goes down, we're going to take care of it, you know. And the other one was like he was just strolling along. You know, he didn't have a care in the world. You know, this was his world, and, you know, there's nothing going to bother me today. And the white ones did not give any kind of semblance to that. But I don't know what it was about them, but they instilled fear in me. I mean, just they didn't vocalize anything. There was no slapping or there was no aggressive moves, but that just filled me with fear.
Yeah, it's scary and fascinating at the same time, because when you listen to people talk about their encounters and what happened to them, you start to find weird little patterns. For example, let's go with like a housewife, and her husband is a long haul truck driver and he's gone for like 3 days. The minute he's gone, these things will come up to the home. The minute he returns, they don't come up to the home anymore. It's weird because in this situation, you and your cousin were there alone and your parents were gone. Then they decide to come up. Did they ever come up to the home again after this?
Not that I can remember, because about a year later, we sold the farm. Parents got a divorce and wanted, you know, to split and sell everything, so they did. But later on that year is when I saw the juvenile black one. We had a place right down the road from us that was a big sand pit, you know, and that's where we would go with our Tonka trucks and everything else, dirt bikes. We'd get down in that pit and play. And the dogs went crazy. They had something in a brush pile and we went to investigate it. But you just got the feeling when you were headed towards it, you know, there's nothing here to see. Just go. There's nothing here to see. But we could see it looked like, the best way I can describe it is a black chimpanzee. We didn't get a good full-on facial view of it because it was hunkered down in the brush pile. But it was every bit of 6 foot tall, and it had to be at least 250 pounds. But we got the feeling, you know, and my cousins felt this too. There's nothing here to see. So we just went on back to the house. And, you know, like you say, where there's one, there's probably more. So there's no telling what would have happened if we had pursued it.
It's kind of weird how you guys were getting that feeling of like nothing to see here. Did the creature run off?
No, not while we were there. And again, The dogs disappeared for a day or two, so something may have scared them. But it was making a keening sound. You know, I can't even describe it, but it was scared. You could tell it was scared. From where I was a side view of it. I could see the side of its head and its shoulders down to its knees, the way it was. It was almost like it was sitting on its haunches in the woodpile, kind of, you know, trying to turn away from everything.
Yeah, it must have been a juvenile or a younger one, because I think a larger one would have just killed those dogs. You know, you guys turning around and going home, was it kind of the fear of the white ones you had seen before?
No, we were just, I guess we were just done. And, you know, that feeling of just, you know, there's nothing to see here. It persisted until we got out to the gravel road. I can remember that like it was yesterday. So once we were out of the area, you know, nothing else was thought of, or we just went on home and went back to doing what we were doing up there.
And I know you're with your cousin. What did your cousin say? I mean, was there any sort of conversation about this? Did you guys ever talk about it?
Oh, yeah, we still talk about it to this day. You know, he can't believe some of the stuff that went on out there. Last Halloween, we had a big Halloween party, and we were talking about, he was like, remember the time we saw that little black Sasquatch? I'm like, yeah. You know, and people looked at us like we were crazy, and he's like, I wonder whatever happened with that. I'm like, I don't know. I said, you know the stories of all those places out there.
And you mentioned that your folks had sold that property, that farm. I know you still live in the area. Have you gone back there?
Oh, I go out there all the time. Yep, go out there all the time just riding around. And I was telling my girlfriend one day when we was out there riding around about the white ones. And we were coming around a curve, and she thought she saw a glimpse of something white moving off into the woods.
Yeah, I often wonder, a lot of times when I talk to eyewitnesses and you hear accounts, it's like they're passing through, and then you hear other accounts where they're actually living on the property and they never leave. After all these years, 40, you know, 40 some odd years later, did you ever talk to your parents? Do you ever talk to your folks and been like, or your mother, and saying, hey, you know, I actually did see what I saw. Do you think she knew?
Yeah, my mom knew. My mom has got dementia now. She's in a nursing home, but she knew. She more or less told me one time she believed me, because she grew up in a real rural area too, and there's always stories about them from there. So, but you know, sometimes people just say, I don't want to hear about it, and you didn't see it, because they don't want to think about things that they might have seen or had done in their past.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain for a second. You know, that first one that you saw was very different than the two white ones, not only behavior, but kind of how they looked. And again, I'm asking your opinion. I know that you don't know and I don't know, but do you think that they were part, like they were in a different group, the white ones, as opposed to that first one that you saw? Or do you think that they were all, you know, in the same group and they just kind of looked different and acted different?
My opinion is, I think the white ones were transient. I don't think they were there a lot. But there were places where we would ride horses that the horses would not go. And it always, you know, would pique my curiosity, because where the horses would not go, there were trees broken off about 8 foot up. You know, just broken off and leaned down, you know, where you break them off and they just hang there. And the horses would not go past that area.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when you look at animals' behavior when these things are around, like your dog. You know, every time these things are around, it's like, I'm out of here. I want no part of this. And I almost think we could take notes from our animals. And even your horses, as you just mentioned. I know when I spoke to Bob Gimlin, you know, he talked about before they saw Patty, their horses were starting to act up and they couldn't figure out what was going on with the horses. And you hear that in many encounters as well. you know, 40 years later and kind of growing up in this situation, how did this affect you?
Well, in a way it did. I mean, you know, you learn to not be so skeptical of everybody. You know, if somebody tells you they've had a weird experience, you kind of are more open to hear what they say. And you might be a little more sympathetic when things really get to them, you know, because you can tell. I mean, there are things that we're talking about today that I haven't really thought of in years. And it brings back the old feelings and it's, you know, gets you kind of shaky and really affects you. There's so many things. And, you know, what really got me thinking about all this again, we went camping with some friends. And we're all musicians. We were sitting around playing music and just having a good time. And my buddy says, "Hey, I'm going to make a Bigfoot call." And I'm like, "Oh, here we go." And the area there is known. It's right. It's a mile away from the Ohio River there. It's really well known for sightings and things. So he makes this call and we really didn't hear too much. And then about 20 minutes later, we got an answer back, and I mean, it was loud and it echoed through everything. And this was just about a year ago. And, he went back out there and we were talking about it. Oh, it's been about 2 weeks ago. We were talking. He said, "I'll never make a howl like that again." He said, "I'll never call again." 'Cause him and his girlfriend went out there. Well, it's his wife now. And they were just out there collecting rocks and looking around. And he said, all of a sudden, I got overcome with fear and something pulled a tree up out of the ground. And he said, "I've never been this scared in my life." He said, "I didn't see anything."
Wait, what? Something pulled a tree out of the ground. Like sapling? What was the circumference of this tree? Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
He said, "I don't want to see anything." But he said, "I've never had so much fear go through me." He said, "We got on a four-wheeler and got out of there." He said, "But I'm never going to make a Bigfoot call again."
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I used to joke around with Cliff and Bobo. They have a podcast called Bigfoot and Beyond. And they were on that show, Finding Bigfoot. And when we very first started becoming friends, I would kind of joke with them about, especially Bobo, this, "You guys are calling these things. What are you going to do if one comes in? I mean, what's kind of the plan? I mean, Moneymaker's not going to take it down. What's kind of your guys' go-to plan if one shows up?" And it's shocking, I think, for a lot of people when they do make a call and something responds. I wanted to ask you about the lights that you saw, you know, because...
Wait, Wes, finish that thought. What was the answer? What are they going to do? Finish answering the question or asking the question.
I'm telling you before, I was real skeptical the UFO of the lights until I saw them, which is a pretty arrogant viewpoint to have. But in the light that we...
There is nothing arrogant about saying I'm skeptical. First of all, there are some people in the internet community that believe Wes made up his Bigfoot story. I'm just saying. So I've been told.
Saw, and I filmed it if you want to watch the video. It was a blue light, but it was I filmed it through night vision, so everything has that chrome green color. But the light was just kind of chilling above the river. It wasn't that big, a little bit bigger than a softball. And it was weird seeing the light because I got the feeling, and I might sound crazy saying this, but I got the feeling like it was alive, like it was watching us as much as we were watching it. And you hear about the lights on people's property when they have Sasquatch around. It's a coincidence that shows up a lot. Sometimes people will say, well, it's a ball of lightning. A ball of lightning is a pretty rare occasion. I mean, there is a hell of a lot of ball of lightnings going on for the amount of reports of these weird lights that people are seeing. I wanted to ask your opinion on the lights. What do you make of it? What do you think that they are?
Well, it just, you know, amazes me that both of those lights were white. And couple of nights later, I see two white Sasquatch. I'm not saying that there's a element. Oh, how should I put this? Well, you can't take anything for granted because, you know, you never know. There might be something that they do. It might be how they move around because, you know, there's so many different opinions on what they are and how they move. I'm not going to say anybody's is wrong or anybody's is right because we'll never know until it's time for us to know. So I do believe they're in correlation with one another in that instance for me.
Every person takes the position that Bigfoot and the aliens have a relationship. It is the most asinine thing I have ever heard. Not one ounce of proof. But these sons of bitches continue to ramble on with this false narrative. It's as if there's a certain segment of the Bigfoot community that have all gotten together and said, look, we're just going to keep pumping the same narrative over and over and over again. It's like the mainstream media. We're just going to pump this narrative over and over and over again. It doesn't matter what people say. We're going to pump it over and over again, nonstop. Bigfoot and the aliens have an unspoken relationship. Or it's a spoken relationship. And the aliens are flying Bigfoot around in their spaceship, dropping them off so we can abduct people. Why? Don't know. Hybrid babies. Looks like a pretty good answer.
Yeah, it is interesting that you saw the two balls of light. Then shortly after that, you saw two white creatures come up to your property. And I don't know if they're related or not. It's a coincidence that shows up a lot. You know, if one person says, hey, I have Sasquatch on my property and I'm seeing these weird lights, you could go, oh, that's strange. I'll kind of look into it. But when you hear it over and over and over and over again that people are seeing these lights and Sasquatch, it makes you wonder what is actually going on. What's your take? What do you think Sasquatch is?
Well, I know we are all, and this depends on people's religious beliefs. I believe that we are all created by God. And to think that he could not create something other than us would be very arrogant. When we don't know their purpose, we don't know, you know, they could have ties to the Nephilim. I've heard those stories. But then again, there are some of them that could be here as watchers. You know, just to watch and see how things
go. Are these people that Wes interviews? This has turned in from a dude who saw Bigfoot when he was in third grade to, well, you know, I've heard this Nephilim thing running around. And, you know, I think that's probably what it is. You know, there's some evidence for that. Is there? I haven't seen it. I've seen nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Even in Jeff Meldrum's famous book, well, not famous, but Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. Nowhere in the book does he verify any of the quote evidence. Do you want to know why? Because there's never been any. Oral traditions, stories that now people have monetized.
But I do know the ones that I saw were definitely, in that moment, flesh and blood creatures. Whether they can teleport, transport, I do know this for a fact. I do believe that they can speak to you without using their lips because there's no other way that when we saw the juvenile, there's no other way that our curiosity wouldn't have taken over, but we heard in our mind just, you know, there's nothing to see here. Go on. There's nothing to see. Just go on, do what you were doing. You know, and I can't account for that other than they must have some other way, maybe telepathy, something along those lines. And that's how, you know, they keep people from encroaching.
That's the answer. This is the ignorance of people. Why haven't we ever captured, shot, have any any authenticated visual recording pictures of Bigfoot. Well, obviously, Mario, Bigfoot has the ability to control technology. Oh, I mean, these people have an answer for everything. Now it's telepathy. Bigfoot can now control you with his mind. We'll let you know when you can see him. There was somebody once in the chat room who told me that Bigfoot has the ability to prevent people from smelling him. Wow. Really? That's a talent. Apparently on loan from God. The ability to prevent humans from smelling you. Wow. Wow.
To have a different kind of experience.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that. I was going to come back to that whole situation because your guys' reaction of like, let's go and nothing really to see, I find odd. But I really want to come back and ask you about that. Before I do, so these creatures, and I'm with you to the point of they're obviously physical. People aren't seeing ghosts, you know, the reactions of people being terrified of something that could kill them.
No, they're not obviously physical, Wes. This is why Wes would never have somebody like me on the show. Because he would make these asinine comments. I would say, Wes, with the exception of the debunked Patterson video, what evidence are you referring to? Please, please enlighten us.
Very, very quickly, just based on the size, do you think that these creatures are natural?
I feel that they are natural. But I also feel that they have other abilities, ones that we do not have. You know, they may not have evolved physically, but mentally they may have evolved a lot further than us. How else can people explain not seeing them and then seeing them? How else can people explain there's a trackway here?
No, there's not a trackway. There's no pictures. There's no video. There's nothing. You're trying to make people think that Bigfoot is just walking down the road and then up and vanishes like a fart in the wind. These are the dumbest people. Seriously. These are folks that sit at home and just go, oh, this is great ideas. These people remind me of a guy I used to consider a friend who was a pathological liar. If you did something once, he did it 15 times. He once said the reason he forgot to go to work is because he went and sat down and started reading a book and got so involved in it. By the time he looked at his watch, it was 6 hours later. What? Not true. What the true story is he got fired and he was too much of a chicken shit to tell his roommate.
You know, there's a lot of things you got to think about. But I do. I think they're physical. I do.
Yeah, and I want to backtrack to when you and your cousin saw that smaller one you guys thought was a chimp out there. You know, as I was listening to the encounter, I was like, oh, that's weird that they, you know, two young men just kind of leave, especially when they're not being threatened. You know, I was surprised curiosity didn't take over. But that overwhelming feeling that you had, was it a feeling of nothing to see here, basically go away? Or was it like a voice you were hearing?
No, it was more of a feeling. There was not a physical voice in our heads. It was just, you know, you get that feeling, you know, there's nothing to see here. You know, just go on. It's all good. And, you know, like I said, we were, you know, that was where we went and played and had fun. And what, looking back on it now, why wouldn't we further investigated what the dogs had pinned down, you know? But something wanted us out of there. I do believe it told us without telling us, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And that's kind of what concerns me. I'll give you a couple examples. Like in a lot of alien encounters, alien abductions and that sort of thing, when you listen to the eyewitness, they'll talk about how communication is done through their mind. I've been watching a lot of near-death experiences, and people either go to heaven or hell. And what's fascinating is, regardless of where they go, they don't talk through their mouth. It's like through their mind. You also hear it in, you know, like demonic encounters where people are hearing stuff, something talking to them in their head. And, you know, and I'm not trying to go down like a religious route by any means, but, you know, you hear that stuff and it makes you think, is that how you communicate in that realm, in that spirit realm? Because, you know, us humans can't do that. I can't read your mind or your thoughts, and we can't communicate this way. But what's weird, in a lot of Sasquatch encounters, you'll hear this, and people will describe it as either a feeling they're having, or they actually hear a real voice in their head, you know, saying, go away, or, you know, something to that extent. Les Stroud from Survivor Man, he told me in his encounter, the thing was talking to him in his head, and he was freaking out over it. He'd never experienced something
like that. Les Stroud never saw a Bigfoot. It was only a way for him to increase his viewership. I'm convinced of that.
Like that before. Do you think there's something more going on here, or do you think that they have just been able to pick up that ability?
I think in some cases it could be more going on there, because I will tell you, in my life, I have dealt with, you know, I don't want to go too far off on a tangent, but I have dealt with demonic spirits.
Oh, my gosh. And, I bet if you told this guy that Bigfoot sexually assaulted somebody, this guy would have said, you know, I sense that he wanted me in an unhealthy way, an unnatural way. I guarantee he would have said that.
The fear that the two white ones instilled with me was kind of along those lines. You know, just that gut wrench and make you feel like you.
Funny how this was never mentioned when you first described the encounter of the two white ones. Gosh, this is just these people are just nuts. I don't understand them.
You want to throw up, kind of. This isn't right, kind of feeling.
Yeah, I want to come back and ask you about this. I'm curious now. Before I do, last question about the white one at your window. You had mentioned the teeth and how it was kind of showing you its teeth. And maybe I missed it. Were they human-like teeth? Is that what you were seeing?
Yes, they were square and blocky. And, you know, I couldn't tell if it was doing it in an aggressive way, or, you know, how some animals will do that trying to scent. You know, they'll flip their lip up to try to, you know, make their nose move to where they can.
Right, wait. Bigfoot had square and blocky teeth like a human's. There weren't long canines, long in size. What? Oh, well, apparently Bigfoot has perfect oral hygiene.
Try to force smell up into their nose. But I do think this one had an aggressive tendency with it, because it instilled a fear in me that made me like sick in my stomach.
Yeah, I've heard other eyewitnesses say basically what you said about.
Yeah. We've heard this all before. We got to stop it. We're nearing the end of the program. I can no longer deal with this sort of tomfoolery. You know, listen, I don't even know why I do this anymore. I think I do it because I literally like to get myself worked up over the craziness of Sasquatch Chronicles. But I'll tell you this. What are you meowing for? Full disclosure, if I was driving across country, I would certainly download this on the old podcast and listen to numerous episodes. You listen to seven of these things in a row, you've traveled 7 hours. Make time fly. You and the people in your car can just make fun about everything. Pause it and do whatever and blah, 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 blah. All right, folks, that wraps up the Monday's edition of the award-winning but yet to be nominated This, That, and the Other Heard Every Monday and Thursday. Here on Revolution Radio, located at revolution.radio, common spelling in your favorite internet browser. Head over to the website, click on the donations tab, where you can view numerous ways to support us financially. Again, this is a 100% listener-supported internet radio station. If you're interested in hosting your own program, click on the schedule from revolution.radio. Find an open slot, either Studio A or B. Click on the contact tab, email the management, tell them who you are, the studio and time slot or slots you are interested in hosting your own program, a little bit about yourself, a little bit about the program, and you could shortly find yourself in an interview with the host review team. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Have yourself a fabulous Monday. I will talk with all of you on Thursday. As always, in the words of Katie Couric, good night, y'all.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is the people's.